This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of October the 8th, 2018. I'm Mason King. Now, we at the IBJ Podcast don't want to imply that plumbers can't be deep thinkers or that philosophers don't know the business end of a wrench. But you have to admit that Jack Hope's quick transition from earning a master's degree in philosophy to starting a plumbing company seemed pretty counterintuitive. Now, that was 11 years ago. Today, Hope Plumbing has more than 40 employees and is expected to hit $6 million in revenue for 2018. Jack Hope splits his time between this firm's splashy new headquarters near 52nd and Keystone and teaching philosophy at Marin University. The plumbers at Hope aren't all trained in the Socratic method, but there's probably more overlap in the two traditions than you might think. At their core, they're both about problem solving. And Jack Hope brings a certain kind of enlightened thinking to his management style. Now, we sat down with Jack to discuss the intersections of his two main pursuits, how Hope has grown so quickly, and the difficulty the firm has had in finding skilled tradespeople while highly educated liberal arts graduates flounder in their employment searches. Here's our conversation. Okay, I'm with Jack, and Jack, as I said earlier, I am going to, at certain points, try to find some commonalities between plumbing and philosophy.
Good luck.
If they are not there, that's fine.
Sure.
Please disabuse me of these notions, and
that'll
be great. But the first question I have is, how does a guy who is finishing up his master's in philosophy with a concentration in bioethics start a plumbing firm?
Yeah, so the way this all started is that I was a junior at IU, and a friend of mine, Tommy Havens, approached me, and I mean, I've known Tommy since kindergarten, right? And so he approached me and said, I've got this idea for this construction business. We were going to sell construction supplies online, like not used, but like sold once and returned, open box stuff a big distributor is not going to use. We're going to sell it online. So anyway, we left IU to start this business, and that business closed for a variety of reasons, primarily because we were 20 and 21 and had no idea what we were doing. It was fun. I mean, we did a couple $1 million in sales in a couple of years. It was a lot of fun. We just had no idea how to manage it. So that business closed, and he and I needed jobs. So he and I went to work for what was at the time his family's commercial plumbing company. And I worked there for a year or so and figured out, I don't really want to do this forever. And that's when I got back in school to do the master's degree. And because I'd been there for a year and a half or two at that point, something like that, I'd picked up like the most basic of plumbing skills and sort of started telling my mom and to tell her friends that, hey, you know, Jack's going back to school and he can do some plumbing handyman type work for you. If you need anything, you know, let him know or whatever. And that's how that started. But I think probably the big break that happened there was that I worked at Sullivan's Hardware all through high school.
Yeah.
And I happened to catch Pat and was chatting with him in there one day and that, hey, I'm doing plumbing work now. I'm back in school. I was, you know, working 20 hours a week or whatever and going to school. And he said, oh, well, you ought to bring some cards in and leave them on the counter here at the store. And I said, well, I'll get some cards printed. I don't yet have any of those. And so I had some business cards printed and put them on a couple of the Sullivan's Hardware counters and more or less immediately had more work than I could keep up with by myself.
And this is while you're doing your master's?
Yeah, this is while I was doing my master's degree. Yeah. So we started, Brad, who's my partner here, joined. I'd been kind of doing Hope Plumbing by myself for maybe a year-ish when Brad joined. Brad's a licensed plumber. That was the point where we figured out there was something here. By the time I graduated from grad school, there were three of us full-time at that point.
You can imagine that, you know, from the observer, it looks like, wow, that's a big disconnect.
Yeah, it was truly just luck or circumstance. I mean, it was not, my family has no history in the trades. The only, I probably think of myself as a philosopher more than I do as a plumber or a business person. I'm teaching at Marion again, and have been for the last couple of years. And I have time in my schedule such that I can do that again. My grandfather and father both owned small businesses, so the entrepreneur bit, I think, was just in the blood. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was something else to do. I thought you just made your own way, right? It was hard for me to ever imagine working for somebody else. It's just not, I just couldn't picture that. I think I would be a terrible employee for most people. I can't sit still. I struggle with being on time to things. I would be a bad employee. And I never had any intention of continuing a plumbing business. I mean, I got to the place where I was done with grad school and really thought I was going to go on. I was going to go to Purdue and get a doctorate and be Dr. Hope, which I thought would be awesome. But I was at a place where, frankly, I was, by the time Hope Plumbing was in its third year, I was making the kind of money that tenured professors make. And I'd met a girl and I made a very financial decision. At the time, I was lucky enough, to keep adjuncting at IUPUI. So I taught all through grad school. I got a graduate assistantship scholarship or something, which basically meant that as long as I would teach a class, they would pay for my school, and that was really cool. And I was able to keep teaching. I taught a class or two every semester for the first 4 or 5 years that Hope Plumbing existed, and then Hope Plumbing was growing like crazy, and I'd gotten married, and she was pregnant, and we had a little boy, so I couldn't keep up with both, so I directed my time towards Hope Plumbing, and that's what I did for 3 or 4 years, just Hope Plumbing, and then in the last couple of years, like I said, have gotten back to teaching at Marion, so I'm at Marion 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursday. I'm teaching business ethics this semester.
Oh, is that right? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, there you go. Well, there's my question is, what does philosophy have to teach us about running a business?
Oh, I think everything. I mean, so this is, right, you've got me on this perfect spot to sit on my high horse about philosophy, but so philosophy is just, for me, it teaches process thinking. It teaches you how to thinking. It makes you be really good at seeing both sides of a story, something that we could all use. It makes us really good at, I think, recognizing which pieces of information are valuable and which are non-valuable, which are just irrelevant, right? So I think for a lot of the philosophy that I do in here is probably just stepping back from problems and trying to see if there's just a whole other better way to approach this thing. I think we do a pretty good job in here of not getting caught up in the, well, we've made this decision and now we have to live with it. Well, no, we don't. Let's call a timeout and see if there's just a whole better way to approach this thing. I think that we, every single one of us, it is a fact that we are doing philosophy all the time anyway. If we're thinking about a thing, right? So philosophy, the word is love of wisdom. It's a Greek word, so it's just love of wisdom. So anytime we're learning anything, we're doing philosophy. I think we forget that philosophy invented all the other sciences, right? That's where it all started.
So did you find that you actually took to running a business fairly easily, or was there a learning curve for you?
I think probably there was, I mean, there's always a learning curve. I'm still learning how to run a business. I learn new stuff all the time. And I think we get better at it all the time. I think one of the things we've done, honestly, lately that's been our best bet is to do our absolute best to treat our employees with the same respect and urgency and care that we do our customers. And that has really, really helped us. And that took me a decade to learn.
And as you're talking about an intentional initiative for the management of this company to do that, sat around and talked
about it. We talk about this all the time. I mean, we are, if without all of our plumbers, we can't do anything. So, to the extent that our guys are happy here, they do a better job. And when we take very seriously this idea that they should be happy at work too, it works better. And I think customers get a better service and a better experience because of it.
How do you make a plumber happy?
The same way you do everybody else. I mean, it's acknowledging what they've done. It's saying thank you. It's being respectful. It's not, right, if I'm Immanuel Kant for a minute, it's treating people as an end and not as a means to something else. It's involving them in your processes. It's listening to them when they have complaints. It's doing some of the things that they suggest, right? I mean, it's the same way you make a customer happy, right? You acknowledge the situation, you communicate, you try to, communication's probably the key. For a long time, I thought the key to making plumbers happy was money, and certainly that's part of it. No one is upset about a big, robust paycheck, right? But that's not all of it. I mean, some of the things that we forget about, many of us that have jobs with a little bit more flexibility, is like, well, if you need to run into Walmart, you run into Walmart or Walgreens to pick up a prescription, whatever it is. Well, you know, there's a lot of folks that track those guys so intensely that they feel like they can't breathe at all. That's hard for them. They don't like feeling watched. We do our best not to micromanage them. And one of the things that I think we do, that some other folks are starting to do, this is not just us, but we are starting to provide training to our plumbers like all the other folks in business get.
So when you finally incorporated and started after grad school, I think you had 4 employees.
Yeah.
How many do you have now?
I think we just went over 40, so we're somewhere between 40 and 45.
Wow. Now that's since 2008, 2007.
Yeah,
since right.
2007.
Well, that's pretty phenomenal. So you teach at a college, you have a master's degree. Several years ago, I think it was 2013, I think in your blog, the Hope blog, you talked about the danger of just seeing college as kind of a default career path.
Yeah.
Just going to college to go to college. There's a lot to be gained by going directly into the trades.
One of the silliest things that we ever told young kids as a nation was work smart, not hard, right? That was one of the ways we got people to go to college. And that's just terrible advice. I would think that working smart and hard would be good advice. So we set college up as this default, and I think that's a shame because not everybody is interested in going to college. So if you're a senior in high school or a junior and you genuinely don't like school and you maintain a 2.3 GPA average and there's nothing in school that you're particularly interested in and you constantly find yourself working with your hands or taking things apart, or even if you just are not interested in school, I don't think the way to fix that is by going to more school and paying a whole lot more money to do it. There are lots of guys that are here at Hope Plumbing who probably would not have gotten much out of a college degree. It's just not, they don't like it, right? I mean, I sit down and I think about the nature of, say, free will, right? It's mesmerizing to me. And this is a question I've spent hours and hours thinking about. Time is another one, right? If those aren't things that interest you, don't get into philosophy, right? So if higher mathematics is terrible to you and it makes your brain hurt, it's not going to get easier when you go to college. Somehow college has turned into like job training, and I think that's a shame. College should be about a higher education. If we want to set up job training stuff for folks, I think that's great, and I think there's lots of ways to do it. I just don't think that's appropriate for college. I hope that's not what colleges are becoming.
Were you also animated by your need to find skilled tradespeople?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, right, yeah, that's for sure what started that is that there's just not a bunch of plumbers running around looking for work. They're never, in my experience, which I'm 15 years into this industry or something, there's never enough plumbers. It's been a little over a year ago, we hired a marketing position, and we're always hiring plumbers. So this marketing position is a position that we'd advertised at, I think, $40,000 to $60,000 a year based on experience. And the plumbing position, I mean, I have several plumbers this year who are, and I just have to qualify this, they are residential service plumbers. They show up at your house, they give you a price to do the work, they do the work while they're there, and then they go to the next house, right? I have several guys in that position that will make over $100,000 this year, and I have several, the bulk of them will be in this 60 to 80 range.
Wow.
Okay. So when we post these two ads, we got about 300 resumes for the marketing position and zero response to the plumbing ad. Yeah. I mean, wrap your mind around that, right? Like, we'd hire a licensed plumber that came in, presented well. Like, if you're listening, I'll hire you right now. And they're just not out there.
Yeah.
Right. So we're that, I mean, the problem is that I think college is also, and this is no knock on any university that I work for now or have worked for in the past, but we're not teaching people for the jobs that exist right now.
Yeah.
I mean, last time I looked, the most sought after job in the state of Indiana was forklift operator. Nobody's telling their kids to be forklift operators, but that's what we need. Mm. That's where you get the job.
So is your growth constrained by being able to hire the right people?
Yes, constantly.
Yeah. So you could have grown quite a bit more had there been people.
I believe we could pick off a tree.
Think
of it this way. We turn down calls. We have to tell customers, I'm sorry, we can't get there in the time that you will need us. I bet we do that a dozen times a day.
Right. You could easily, I would assume, add one or two people at least.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more like five or six right now.
You were kind enough, I think, when we did a story last year to estimate, I think, what your 2017 sales would be. I think you said 4 million.
Yeah. We were just over 4 last year, and I think we'll be about 6 this year.
That's a huge increase.
That's cutting advertising.
Wow.
Right? So that's just the sort of natural growth from word of mouth. We've had a really good year in terms of hiring people. We've brought in two or three really good guys that we're really happy to be here. We're very lucky to have gotten them. So that's been a big part of this.
Care to throw out a ballpark for profit margin?
I will tell you that a well-run service business should target something like 15 to 20% margins. Whether they hit that or not depends on how well they run their business.
Okay. Are you somewhere in there?
Yeah.
Okay. 15 to 20.
Yeah. It's always weird for us because we have a, and frankly, if I'm being perfectly honest about the profit margin question, it's such a bogus question because if I just triple my salary, my profit margin comes down dramatically. So I could tell you my profit margin is 6 and bury all the money in salary, right? So it's kind of a bogus question. Hope Plumbing is it's a very healthy business, and it's been very good to Brad and I.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I have always had that question. I might have asked that question maybe 100 times. Well, I'll take that back, maybe 1,000 times.
Sure.
And I've always in the back of my mind thought, well, they could just increase their own salary.
You can just juke it. I mean,
yeah, the owners can just take the money out.
Well, or like, Hope Plumbing has paid for my cell phone forever. I haven't paid for gas personally in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. There's just so many places where you can sort of eat away at that margin. I mean, you can contribute really, really heavily to a 401k plan or retirement plan and eat up some of your margins in there. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I had this conversation with another business owner at one point. He's like, oh yeah, we haven't had a 10% year in a long time. And I'm like, dude, okay, but like, I've seen how you live your life. Things are clearly going okay here. So that was ultimately the conversation that happened. And yeah, the margin's low, but that doesn't.
Right. Or you could take half of what you're getting now and your margins would be better.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the number that I think if folks want to get to the heart of that question, they should ask about owner compensation as a matter of percentage.
Sure. Sure.
And that is...
Assuming that compensation is part of their expenses.
Sure.
And yeah, overall, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day, what matters to the owners of a business ultimately, I mean, among other things, is how much money they're making, right? And I think talking about owner compensation is the way to have that conversation.
Now, you just recently, I think it was last year, moved from a rather small headquarters.
That's a nice way to put that.
Let's say 1,500 square feet?
Yeah.
Maybe. It was a house.
Yeah, it was originally a double that had been opened up a little bit. It's a super awkward little place. Yeah. I remember walking in there and thinking, what will we ever do with all this space? We outgrew it pretty quickly.
Yeah, so just a couple of blocks away on 52nd Street here, just south of Keystone, you bought this building, which is 15,000 square feet?
Yeah, it's 15,000.
How does that change the business?
Dramatically. So what's happened since we moved in here? Well, without any prompting from us, the folks working in the office have started dressing up a little bit more.
Hmm.
They just spend a little bit more time getting themselves together. And we don't have policies really for what folks wear in here. I mean, be basically reasonable or something, but nothing too specific.
Yeah.
The other one, when I knew it had really made a difference, was when, and several guys have done this at this point, but they've come here on a day off or after hours with their family to show them where they work.
Oh.
Because they're proud of this building. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know how you put a price tag on that. That's a really cool feeling for us. And I think that in general, we have, it's not that we were like unprofessional before, but I think that our professionalism has stepped up just a little bit.
Well, that was great, Jack. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
My thanks again to Jack Hope. Hey, before you get on with your day, I wanted to draw your attention to a couple of stories in IBJ's print edition this week. John Russell reports that many hospitals in central Indiana are racking up penalties for failing to fix their patients the first time. Their Medicare payments next year will be docked as a result of having some patients readmitted within 30 days. Also in this week's issue, Sam Quinn reports that cities in Hamilton County are finally making some progress creating new housing for low and middle income earners. The costs of home and monthly rent in the county have been blamed for driving out those who work in the service sector, in healthcare, education, and even municipal government. You can find these stories on the newsstand or, of course, online at IBJ.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast this week. I'm Mason King. We'll be back again next week.